Well, good evening. I brought the Lanka, the Tara Sutra, which is, I think, I don't know whether it's in paperback or not, but this was what Bookshop Santa Cruz had. So this is the new Red Pine translation of the Lanka. That was one of the suggestions for our study. It's the way Red Pine does it is to do some lines of the sutra and then some lines of his and others' interpretations. So it's very rich. And we've done it with the Diamond Sutra, and it works very nicely. It's a great method of exposing us to more than one point of view. There are lots and lots of old teachers for hundreds and hundreds of years, and they all have their point of view about each one of the sutras, and often recorded what they thought. And then the Vimalakirti is... There are three versions, at least three that I know about, only two of which I have. The Charles Look one is the oldest one. He was a very early translator, very fine one, actually. And then Burton Watson also translated it. And then Robert Thurman did. This is the most current one that I know about. I'm sure somebody is working on it also, because it's just the way these things work. But Bob Thurman is also very, very thorough, and this is well written. So this is certainly a possibility. It's not nearly as heavy duty as this one. This will take some real, quite a long time, I would think, to get through this one. And this will take a lot less. So that's certainly something to think about, too. But we've got all the time in the world. I mean, there's nothing to stop us from taking 2 years to do the Lankavatara Sutra. So, I don't know how many of you have seen this material and how much you've thought about it between last week and this week, or what you think about it now.
So, what's the topic of the
The story. I can't remember. I read D.T. Suzuki translated it. There are two volumes. And I read it early on. And, you know, I don't remember what it was about at all. This might tell on the flyleaf. The Lankavatara Sutra is the holy grail of Zen. Ah. Zen's first patriarch, Bodhidharma, gave a copy of this text to his successor, Huiko, and told him everything he needed to know was in this book. Passed down from teacher to student ever since, it covers all the major teachings of Mahayana Buddhism and contains but two teachings, that everything we perceive as being real is nothing but the perceptions of our own minds, and that the knowledge of this is something that must be realized and experienced for oneself and cannot be expressed in words. In the words of Chinese Zen masters, these two teachings become known as have a cup of tea and the taste of tea. This is the first translation into English of the original text used by Bodhidharma, which was the Chinese translation made by Gunabhadra in 443, and upon which all Chinese Zen masters have relied ever since. In addition to presenting one of the most difficult of all Buddhist texts in clear English, Red Pine has also added summaries, explanations, and notes, including relevant Sanskrit terms on the basis of which the Chinese translation was made. This promises to become an essential text for anyone seeking a deeper understanding of Zen. Yes.
I didn't think about it even once, but since you asked, I was thinking since the Vimalakirti is shorter and can be done in a couple of months, maybe. I don't know. We could do that first, and then if we really still want to do the Ankavachara Sutra, we can either do it or maybe we don't have to do all of it. We can choose, you know, certain chapters or whatever book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe folks wouldn't want to spend 2 years on the same thing for a long time.
Well, all of these sutras are arguments. They're actually logical arguments, sort of logical arguments, laying out the proposition of selflessness, for instance, or and then it's usually question and answer. The dumb bunny bodhisattva asks Buddha, you know, well, what about this? And then Buddha answers, and then, well, what about this, building on that answer? And so they usually go like that. So it builds up to finally the conclusion, which is that there is no conclusion, or that there is, it just dumps the whole thing upside down in some way. In order to help us think not thinking, to dissolve our attachment to our ideas about things in one way or another, so that although we read with keen attention and follow the argument, at the end the argument is that things are thus. And so it always ends up giving us back to ourself and our life and our world. Always. But from a different point of view each time, which is why they've all been saved, because they all have different arguments, different ways of positing it. And some deal with the self, and some deal with time, and some deal with, you know, there are many different aspects of our life as it is. And so it's been expressed in a lot of different ways. So Vimalakirti is a cute story. I don't think the Lanka is a cute story, but Vimalakirti is. And it's about a lay people, a layman. And so that brings it in sort of into our life more directly, since we're all lay people too, and he bests them all, you know, all the bodhisattvas. So so what do you think? What should we do?
I think that they call the Holy Grail Zen.
Yes.
It's very compelling.
It is, isn't it?
I have 2 years. Yes, I'm playing college.
Good. You look like you have more than that.
You never know. You never know.
It also called it the most difficult.
Well, we're smart.
So maybe that's one better, not done by oneself, but with an experienced teacher.
Probably.
So that argues for doing a lot of art.
It's true. Well, anything else to say?
I wasn't here last week, but I'm just curious what happened to the idea of the Okamura book,
Living by Vow. It's just real basic chapters addressing each one of the sutras. And none of it goes anywhere, it just is presenting them.
Okay.
It's a way of presenting all the Zen teachings in a very simple and very wonderful way. It's a good beginner's book.
But it's not a book that we would study. It sounds more like a sampler.
It's a sampler.
Okay.
So I think we're beyond that.
Okay.
I mean, I know we are, way beyond it. And it's very helpful, and you can recommend it to people because it gives, and he's such a nice, he has such a nice voice as he writes.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Well, I think they both sound fine, but I think if we did the Lanka, if we start to get bogged down, maybe we could just have a discussion about that. If it starts to become too much for us, or you get stuck somehow.
We've done that before, haven't we?
Well, not since I've been around.
I think we got stuck sometime and just stopped.
Oh.
Something. I can't remember what it was now. Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Or we could stop and pick up the Vimalakirti and then go back. You know, that's a little comic relief or something. Could you bear it if we did the Lanka? Would it feel too difficult?
Fine. Everything's difficult to me. But I have that on my bookshelf, and I don't think, from what you've said, I can get through it now by myself. So I'll give somebody else the book if we're not going to go through it, because I can't do it on my own.
Have you tried?
No.
Oh.
I just finished the Living by Vows today.
And oh, nice.
That was hard enough for me. So without you, I'm a sunk ship. But anything.
Okay. Well, who's for the Lanka?
I didn't hear you.
Who's for the Lanka?
No.
Okay. Marie, you're for the Vimalakirti?
I brought it with me.
Oh!
No, but I am convinced by my own argument.
Okay. How about you, Britt?
You know, I'm just here for the ride. I don't have a strong opinion on what we study next.
Okay. You're not exactly here for the ride. You're part of the wheels.
Oh, well, thanks, but...
Okay.
It's all the same, really.
Okay. Okay.
What about for you, Angie? I mean, is it a challenge? I mean, you're going to have to probably work hard, too, to...
Yes, I probably will.
For us.
Yeah.
Is it okay with you?
Well, you know, I have a lot of reading time now, so I've been given a machine for my leg that squeezes it for an hour in erratic ways, and I thought I could sit with it, but it's not sit-withable, but I can read with it, And so I'm doing a lot of reading, an hour in the morning before I get up and an hour in the evening after I've gone to bed. And it's doing wonders for my leg, and I can read a lot of things in that. So it's amazing what things happen that give you a present sometimes when you aren't expecting it. So I'm game. Sasha?
So we all sign up to read some each week and then we listen to the discussion?
I think that's the way we've done it before. And
so
that's...
pick up the text from Santa Cruz, Bookshop Santa Cruz?
That's where I got it. Okay. I'm sure Amazon has it, but they would be grateful at the bookshop if we bought it there. They're practically the only surviving private bookstore left. But Powell's will probably have it, and all the online stores, too.
Maybe East West in Mountain View?
Oh, yeah, they probably will. Yeah. Mm-hmm, they will. Yeah.
What year was it?
What year?
What year it was written?
Is that 423?
So it's pretty... Oh, I meant the translation.
Sorry. Oh, the translation, 443 is when it was written. It's this year.
I'm sure it took them years to do that. He must have been working on it for a long time.
I don't know how he does as much as he does. And Thomas Cleary is the same. They just keep churning out these things. They have a crew. You know, they don't do the whole thing themselves. They have a whole bunch of people working with them. Sure, sure.
It's slow going, you know. Written in, he's translated from the Chinese. I mean, it's not the most even. Even if you... No, whatever language it's written in, it's so deep and so indirect, it's not something you can, you know, crank out. But I think the Chinese, you know, I've read some of these things in Chinese, and some of the clauses and so forth, it's slow going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you know the words, if you don't have a commentary or
and this is ancient Chinese, so this is different too. Yeah.
It's all sort of classical, but the Zen stuff is so strange anyway. You know, I mean,
the use of words in Zen. Yes. Yes.
I mean, trying to figure out the grammar or the syntax of, because it's so loose. The grammar.
Mm-hmm.
Once you figure that out, there's four or five possible ways of seeing it, you know, and which one do you choose? I mean, it's not.
Well, you have to have a background in meditation, one. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense.
And the other background,
yes.
And the history and the kind of the ambience, you know, the mindset of them and how these guys operated.
And where it sits in history, too. Yeah.
Different. Even Chinese, like today, it's like foolishness that the average Chinese would come to that. I couldn't read that. Oh, really? Even if maybe it's a month or something. Yeah, okay. Very deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Well, I've got the translator's preface here. April 1st is. That's funny. That's off to a funny start anyway. which gives us some background which might be helpful. Zen traces its genesis to one day around 400 BC when Buddha held up a flower and a monk named Kashyapa smiled. From that day on, this simplest yet most profound teaching was handed down from one generation to the next. At least this is the story that was first recorded 1,000 years later, but in China, not in India. Apparently, Zen was too simple to be noticed in the land of its origin, where it remained an invisible teaching. It was not until an Indian monk named Bodhidharma brought it to the Middle Kingdom that Zen finally made landfall. This bearded barbarian, who became China's first Zen patriarch, was only slightly more perceptible than Kashyapa's smile, but he was perceptible, appearing in a brief biographical notice recorded by his disciple Tan Lin, and in a more extensive biography by Cao Husan in Sukao Sen Chuan. But the event that brought Bodhidharma to the attention of historians and hagiographers alike occurred in or around 534, when he chose Hui Ko as his successor and handed him a copy of the Lankavatara Sutta. Bodhidharma told him everything he needed to know was in this book, and Zen and the Lanka have been linked ever since, if they were not already linked in India. The title of this book that contained everything Hui Ko needed to know is a combination of the Sanskrit words Lanka and Avatara. Chinese commentaries say Lanka means unreachable. Maybe it does. I don't know what they base this on. The only definition I can find is that the word refers to the island we now call Sri Lanka, or to its principal town. Perhaps the name was derived from the root lunk or lung, which means to go to or to go beyond, respectively. But if that were true, it would be reachable. And according to Buddhist chronicles, it was as the Buddha himself reached Lanka on 3 occasions, one of them being to transmit the teaching of this sutra. Such chronicles, however, were compiled centuries after the Buddha's reported visits. The earliest recorded appearance of Buddhism on the island did not occur until 150 years after Buddha's nirvana, when Mahinda, the son of King Ashoka, introduced the Dharma to the island's inhabitants. As for the second part of the title, Avatara, this means to alight or descend, and usually refers to the appearance of a deity upon earth, and from which we get the word avatar. Thus, the sutra's title could be translated An Appearance on Lanka, referring to the Buddha's reputed visit to the island. So, what he's really saying, he doesn't know. And he goes on to talk about the sutra. Question about whether it originated in China or India. The constant refrain of the Lankavatara is the all-importance of an inner perception or self-realization. This is the constant refrain of the sutra. It isn't just about Zen. It is firmly rooted in what would later become known as Yogacara Buddhism. It focuses on the bodhisattva path that still dominates Mahayana Buddhism. But it does all this far beyond the normal venues of Mahayana discourse on the distant island of Lanka. Just as the Diamond Sutra teaches detachment from dharmas and the Heart Sutra teaches the emptiness of dharmas. The Lankavatara teaches the non-projection of dharmas, that there would be no dharmas to be empty or to be detached from if we did not project them as existing or not existing in the first place. The Buddha tells Mahamati, because the various projections of people's minds appear before them as objects, they become attached to the existence of their projections. So how do they get free of such attachments? The Buddha continues, by becoming aware that projections are nothing but mind. Thus do they transform their body and mind and finally see clearly all the stages and realms of self-awareness of Tathagatas and transcend views and projections regarding the five dharmas and modes of reality. And he says, not having proclaimed the illusory nature of projections, including such Yogacara categories as the five dharmas and the three modes of reality, the Buddha directs Mahamati to its source, namely consciousness itself. He then explains how consciousness works and how liberation consists in realizing that consciousness is a self-fabricated fiction, just another illusion, and how bodhisattvas transform their consciousness into the projectionless Tathagata Garbha, or womb from which the Buddhas arise. Such a teaching is not something everyone is prepared to hear. But Mahamati continues to ask questions, and the Buddha continues to answer, yet in a way that always leads his disciple back to the two teachings that underlie this sutra, the nothing but mind of Yogacara and the self-realization of Zen. So, are you up for it? Book has a nice smell. It's always a good test of a book. The ink and the paper both. It has good paper.
It's one thing you won't get on your iPad.
That's right. It's a real book. He gave it. He said, "This, you should have this." Yeah.
And it's a conversation between Buddha and this.
Well, at the beginning, it's a request from a king. Thus have I heard. This is the very first. Once the Bhagavan was staying in the South Seas on the peaks of Lanka, in a place adorned by countless jewels and flowers. In addition to an assembly of great monks, he was also joined by a host of great bodhisattvas from other Buddha lands. Sounds just like the Lotus Sutra begins. Led by Mahamati Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, they were masters of every kind of samadhi, spiritual power, and psychic ability, and were the recipients of the blessings of countless Buddhas. Skilled in the knowledge that external objects are perceptions of one's own mind, they had opened doors of liberation for beings in every mental and physical capacity, and were thoroughly versed in the five dharmas, the modes of reality, the forms of consciousness, and the two kinds of no-self. There are little numbers by all of those to look up in the back. At that time, the Bhagavan had been expounding the Dharma for 7 days in the palace of Sagara, the serpent king. Upon reappearing, he was welcomed by Shakra and Brahma and the host of serpent maidens. Lifting his eyes and beholding Lanka's Mount Malaya, he smiled and said, "On Lanka's Mount Malaya, the Tathagatas, the Arhats, the fully enlightened ones of the past, have taught the self-realization of Buddha knowledge, which is beyond the comprehension of Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas, or the mistaken knowledge of followers of other paths. Today, for the sake of Ravana, ruler of the Yakshas, I too will teach this teaching." By the power of the Tathagata, King Ravana heard these words. Oh, the notes are right after. That's very helpful. And heard that the Bhagavan had reappeared from the Serpent King's palace, accompanied by Shakra and Brahma and countless serpent maidens. I always think we should paint a picture of these things as we go by and be so cool. And he saw the thoughts of those in that assembly stirred by the wind of externality and rising like so many waves in the oceans of their repository consciousness. Ravana shouted joyfully, "I will go and invite the Bhagavan to Lanka for the lasting happiness and welfare of humans and devas." And then he got on a flower-decked chariot with his royal retinue and went to see the Buddha. So that's how it begins. And then the notes are right after the... And they're quite extensive. Thank you.
We've
got to
get through the whole thing tonight,
Jeffrey. Yeah. Yeah, we're only on page 20. And I haven't read the notes. Well, it should be interesting. And certainly to begin, anyway. They're beautiful verses in here, just like waves in a boundless sea blown by a powerful wind, breakers in a black expanse, they never for a moment cease. Wave after wave of consciousness breaks and swells again. Blue and red and every color, milk and sugar and conch shells, fragrances and fruits and flowers, the sun and moon and light. So there's some very beautiful things in here. It's an interesting mix. Okay. Shall we do it? Okay. And Vimalakirti will be next. Let's promise ourselves at the same time.